Hello everybody, good morning from Vienna. This is Günther Fehlinger Jan speaking here from Pax Europiana, from Günther Pod. I'm so happy to have a very special guest this morning from a country I've never been, but I love and admire in some aspects, in some I want to exit. Yes, it's South Africa, and it's a faraway country, and we have a very prominent representative of Free the Cape. And it's a very good week this week because we have the G20 summit coming up. And you know, my friends, I'm absolutely as well for ex-G20 because this is also a failed organization. And I'm very happy to have gentlemen I can now discuss. And I'm looking very much forward. Please, Phil, introduce yourself and very welcome on the show.
Thank you, Gunther. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Phil Craig, and I'm a co-founder of an organization called the Cape Independence Advocacy Group in the Western Cape. We are advocating for the Western Cape, which is one of South Africa's nine provinces, to break away from South Africa democratically and peacefully, and to chart effectively our own path outside of South Africa.
Very good. Explain our international audience, because most people know about South Africa, basically Nelson Mandela, and there was apartheid, and you know, most of the world doesn't know a lot about the Cape. And so explain us, what's your motivation? What's going wrong in South Africa to justify that? And why is basically South Africa not working at the current situation? And why is it justified to have the independence of Cape?
Well, so South Africa's never worked. That's the irony. So South Africa is a colonial construct. It's a country that's only 115 years old. It was formed in 1910 by effectively the British government. It was a solution that they imposed onto South Africa, and they brought together a number of independent territories, forced them at the end of the Boer War into a forced allegiance, and the Western Cape. Sort of the Western Cape, South Africa is effectively the size of Western Europe, or about half the size of Western Europe, I should say. We have 11 official languages, many more unofficial languages. We have vast disparities of culture. We want completely different things, and we're sort of forced into this one melting pot, which can work. I mean, if we look at Belgium, or we look at Switzerland, or countries where you have, you know, a very multicultural, multilinguistic states. But in those states, then you have great decentralization, which allows the different communities to interact with each other, where everybody still retains a degree of autonomy and sovereignty. In South Africa, we have a unitary state. So we have all of these groups forced together. And you've probably heard that saying that democracy must be more something more than two wolves and a sheep voting on what to eat for dinner. We're the sheep, and South Africa is that democracy. So effectively, if we look at the Western Cape, which is one of South Africa's nine provinces, we're linguistically different for the rest of South Africa. We are demographically different for the rest of South Africa. We're culturally different for the rest of South Africa. We're climatically different to the rest of South Africa. And the majority of people in the Western Cape, so people talk about 1994 as if this was this miracle of democracy. But since 1994, the majority of people in the Western Cape have never once been governed according to the government they voted for. We're governed by a government that is ideologically a polar opposite to what we want. And we have no prospect of ever being governed how we vote. So we're trapped inside of this unitary state. And it's not a great place to be. It's got the highest, Western Cape has the highest murder rate in the world. The national government insists on controlling crime, even though the people of the Western Cape want to govern their own policing. We have race-based policies, which are forced onto us by the national government. There's now more race-based policies or race-based laws in South Africa than at any time during apartheid. And the Western Cape people habitually have voted against them, but we have them enforced on us anyway. And because most people in the Western Cape are ethnic minorities in the national sense, we're actually discriminated against. So we've got laws discriminating in favor of the majority, against us, the minority, but we're a majority in our own province, and we can't, we didn't vote for them, we can't vote them out. We're absolutely trapped in this failing system of government, and Cape independence is just really an extension of democracy. Look, we want to be governed according to the way that we vote and live according to our ideological and cultural values. You know, and we've got nothing against the rest of South Africa, but I mean, that is, you know, in essence, what is that? The right of self-determination. We want self-determination for ourselves.
And tell me about your new state. What's the capital of it, and how many people will live in West Cape? And what's the exact name? Will it be Cape Republic or West Cape Republic? What's your plan for that?
Well, look, so, I mean, so obviously that in many ways they're details that'll come at the end. The Western Cape itself has currently got about 7.2 million people in it, and Cape Town is the let's call it in your language the state capital. Cape Town is, you know, the oldest city in South Africa. Call it the mother city here. And we currently the Western Cape exists already. We have a provincial government. It's just got no powers. We have a provincial electorate. We have a provincial parliament. We even have a provincial constitution. But unlike in many European states, where when you have that system, that the sort of the different provinces or regions have quite a high degree of autonomy, our constitution, our national constitution, written that gave us a lot, you know, pretty well leaves allows us to charge gambling and graveyards. You know, but actually, economic policy, taxation, labor law, international policy, everything that's really significant vests with the national government and is forced onto us. Our working title is the Cape of Good Hope. The Cape of Good Hope is a traditional name for the region where we are, and obviously it's, you know, it's very symbolic for what we want. Yeah, South Africa is a country that could be knocking it out of the park. We are so blessed with resources in every possible way, and we're failing through mismanagement and terrible policies, not because we don't have all of the ingredients to make a success. Yeah, when South Africa, yeah, I'm certainly not advocating for the previous policies of apartheid. I was, you know, very much against apartheid, but under the National Party, at least South Africa was the economic powerhouse of Africa. I mean, absolutely dominant in every sense. It no longer is. You know, we were the world leader in mining. Now I think we're something like 10th or 20th. We had the biggest economy in Africa. I think we've now got the second or the third biggest. You know, we're just falling apart in every possible way. It's an absolute tragedy. Human. Historically, culturally, in every possible way, and it's entirely avoidable.
So South Africa in many ways is very much a socialist and a centralist state and not a federal state like the United States of America or Germany or Austria in a sense. And
Yeah,
that's
no,
the reason.
absolutely. We're a unitary state. Actually, they call us a quasi-federal state because we have, yeah, if you look at our constitution, oh gosh, you've got nine provinces and you've got provincial governments. So therefore, you're a federal state. So we have this, you know, federal markers or federal structure. But actually, because national government controls absolutely everything, then you know, in instantly, you've just kind of got these vassal states. And that's where we are as a, you know, as a, in the Western Cape and in other areas. But I mean, obviously, we can only speak for ourselves here in the Western Cape.
And in terms of corruption and inflation, we hear a lot of, and crime, we hear a lot of negative things about South Africa under the ANC for the last 30 years, very much declining in public safety, in economic output. So that's also a clear sign of decline.
Yeah, look, I mean, so when you tell the stories from South Africa, one of the hardest things for, look, I'm originally British by birth. You may pick up the accent. I moved to South Africa when I was in my 30s. So I've kind of lived in both worlds. And one of the hardest things when you're talking to people in Europe is you just don't have a sense of reference, because we try to explain what's happening here. But it's unimaginable to you that it could actually happen. So if you look at policing, for argument's sake, we have, since 2000, we've had seven chiefs of police. Six of them have been fired for dishonesty, and the other one resigned because the government was trying to force him to be dishonest. One of the ones that was resigned and was fired as the chief of police then became the minister of police. I mean, ANC, it's absolutely unthinkable. So, you know, policing has absolutely collapsed. Nobody calls the police. The police do not function. Something like 90% of our emergency number, you know, 10111 is the Americans 911, the British 999. Something like 90% of calls to our emergency number go unanswered. You know, if you phone the police on Monday, maybe they'll come on Thursday. I mean, you know, to say South Africa is a dysfunctional state from that level is you know, it's so dysfunctional you can't possibly imagine it. In Europe, what you have in South Africans is we're a wild bunch. Yeah, we have this frontier mentality. So what do? Is we, and it's one of the challenges, we just fix things ourselves. We don't rely on the state at all. You know, we organize our own education, we organize our own healthcare, we organize our own security. You might have read of the 2021 riots, where they're up in KZN. Now listen to this. This is the truth. It's well publicized. Private citizens had to surround the police station and defend the police from the criminals. So the private citizens defended the police. You know, farmers brought in about ₹1 million of ammunition and had to provide the police with ammunition during the riots because the police had run out. It's unthinkable.
It's crazy, really. No, that's many people in Europe don't know that. So please tell me, Phil, you know, I have to ask you that one as well, because you are white from your skin color. And, you know, the history of apartheid in South Africa, and a lot of the negative comments I see on your Twitter handle is, you know, something like that's extreme, probably Nazi, probably white supremacists, probably want to bring back apartheid. And how do you answer these questions? Are you a mainstream movement? Do you have extreme philosophies? Or what kind of state you want to form in the Cape Republic?
No, so that's the irony. Look, obviously, I think you will understand this in Europe, and for us, it's just amplified more. If you swim against the stream, if you argue for something that's, then actually calling you racist is the standard way to shut somebody down. Yeah, and actually, what about someone like me? It just doesn't work. Call me what you like. If they want to call me racist, they can tattoo it on my forehead. I don't actually care, because actually I want to work in facts, not in fiction. But the reality is, I'm profoundly non-racial, and South Africa has got a non-racial bill currently before Parliament. It's not been voted on. It's at the committee stage. I wrote it. So actually, you know, in meaningful terms, I am one of the people fighting vehemently for non-racialism. One of the things that we want in an independent Cape is a non-racial state, because South Africa's constitution has non-racialism as its founding provision. But we have 145 race laws, and the national government is absolutely crazy. We want to get rid of them all. I mean, you cannot think, if I want to apply for a job, they want to know my race. If I want to open a bank account, they want to know my race. If I want to buy something from another company as a company, they want to know who owns the company. They want to know who I'm selling to the race, who I'm buying to the race. They want to know whether the sports teams at schools levels, okay, you can only have so many players of each race. We have more race laws now than apartheid, and we want to get rid of them. Unfortunately, in South Africa, if you're white and you say we want to get rid of race laws, then they say that's racist, because what about apartheid? We need race laws to protect the black majority, which is absolutely crazy. How can you possibly need race laws to protect the 80% of the population from the 20%? And by the way, white people in South Africa make about 7% of the population. You know, so there are inequalities in South Africa. I'm not hiding that. And many of those are a legacy of apartheid, and they do need to be fixed. But the solution to problems that were created by state-sponsored racism is most definitely not more state-sponsored racism. You know, it's creating opportunities for everybody, growing the economy, and creating a good education system that creates opportunities for people and skills them to the point where they can take advantage of that. And that's what we want. We want to create, for want of a better expression, we want to create a first world country in Africa. And South Africa was a second world country and is rapidly becoming a third world country.
So you don't want to turn back the tide before 1990, but you want to build a modern free state like in Europe or a Western country.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And look, and ironically, I think a lot of Western countries should have a good look at South Africa, because this is where they're heading. You know, there's an awful lot we should be a cautionary tale to many Western countries of what happens if you sort of head down this path of political correctness, because there is no stopping. It just gets worse and worse and worse and becomes to the extreme. And that's where we are in South Africa. You know, we're sitting with sub 1% growth for a decade. Unemployment at 43%, youth unemployment over 60%, the highest crime rates in the world, and all of that whilst we're sitting upon some of the biggest mineral wealth in the world and vast natural resources. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. You know, we you know, if there's a definition of plucking defeat from the jaws of victory, South Africa is it. And you know, the trouble is here in the Western Cape. You know, we make up 12% of the South African population. We can never vote South Africa into pursuing good policies. You know, South Africa has to vote itself into pursuing good policies. But we're voting for good policies, and we have done for 30 years since 1994. So our only solution is to say, look, we can't, you know, we can't stop you, you know, acting crazily, but we need to be able to isolate ourselves from your crazy decisions so that we can be governed according to sensible, so that we can then create a vibrant, safe, non-racial country for all of the people that live here and live our best lives.
Perfect. So now you can be sure of the support of all my listeners, because we really want to have a better, freer, fairer Cape Republic, and that's very good, especially because many people are very unhappy with the foreign policy of South Africa. Let's come to that. What's going on? Because, you know, they are not doing anything for Ukraine. They're in BRICS, and they hate Israel, and they have not recognized Kosovo. So in this test of my foreign policy, this is absolutely one of the worst foreign policy performance. And can you explain me exactly why it's so extreme, the South Africa on the global stage, and why it's so aligned to Russia and China? What's going on?
Well, so you have to, so there's a split, and actually the Ukraine-Russia is a great example of, I talked about this divide, this ideological and cultural divide. So that's actually a really good lens to see this South African divide. So when the Ukraine-Russia crisis started, Russia, South Africa carried out military exercises with naval exercises with Russia and China.
Really? So that's so bad.
Yeah. And the Western Cape lit up its town hall in the colors of the Ukraine flag. So they were the two, and the Western Cape Premier, who is not always very radical, and I wish he was much more radical in many other issues. He banned Russian diplomats from all Western Cape functions, and he invited
very good
Ukrainian diplomats. And when Putin was going to come for one of the other functions, I can't remember what it was at the time, he said that if Putin came to the Western Cape were going to arrest him. So
Perfect.
That's
Perfect.
There you've got that ideological divide between those two parts. That probably gives a lens for the difference. Where does this come from? When people talk about the ANC, we think of the ANC as being this kind of single entity. But actually, the ANC is what's formed what's called of a tripartite alliance. So when you have an ANC government, it's the ANC and the South African Communist Party and the COSATU, which is the all of the unions. So actually, you've got the unions, the communists, and the ANC have governed South Africa for 30 years. I think of the presidents, Mandela was in the Communist Party, Zuma was in the Communist Party. I think Mbeki was. I stand under correction. I don't think Ramaphosa was, but he was aligned to them and as the union leader. So why are the ANC aligned to Russia and China? Because they're communists. Somebody said, and the only country in the world that doesn't think that the Cold War was lost and is still fighting it is South Africa. Mm-hmm. So we're completely, you know, and you look at Mugabe, the Russian Zuma, they go and take treatment in Russia. You know, South Africa is officially non-aligned. It's absolute nonsense. So at South Africa, the national level, is completely in bed with Russia and China. And it's only really the Western Cape, which is where the majority of people, you know, have never supported the ANC, but the majority here are not. And we did some polling earlier this year. before I went to Washington, before I went to Washington, and we ran a poll and we asked people in the Western Cape through a proper polling agency. Would you rather the Western Cape be aligned to the EU and the US or Russia and China? And 2/3 of Western Cape people wanted to be aligned to the EU and US, and 1/3 Russia and China. And most of those then will probably be amongst the ANC and the EFF supporters that are here in the Western Cape. So they've got this very, very clear divide, and that's why they're close to those people, because they love them. It's the same people. They're cut from the same cloth.
And what about this Israel, this anti-Israel policy of South Africa? It's really like the leading hate nation against Israel. What's wrong here?
Yeah, look, so that's a more difficult topic for us to look at, in so much as the Western Cape has about 7% of the Western Cape is Muslim. And one of the great things about the Western Cape is Christian and Muslim families have traditionally been very, very much intertwined in the same families, intermarry, and therefore we've had this fantastic cultural tolerance. And the Israel-Palestine issue is quite a divisive one around Cape independence in terms of the other people that are very much supportive of Israel. There are people who are supportive of Palestine, although much less so Hamas. I mean, Hamas are a terrorist organization. And I think, what do we say as an organization? All people have a right to self-determination. And that absolutely includes the Israelis, but it also includes the Palestinians. It doesn't have a right for them to be terrorists and it's a difficult one. But nationally, it's the same story. I mean, if you look at the ANC, we're anti-Western. So they're always going to take every single policy that's anti-Western. They pretend not to be anti-Western, but they're so you've got this divide. So this has got really very little to do with Israel and Palestine, and much more to do with this the global division in terms of people. So for example, the ANC has been outspoken for years in support of Palestine and Western Sahara. And South Sudan. So they speak up on behalf of the rights of self-determination of the people that it suits. But they weren't very much fussed about the rights of self-determination of the people in Ukraine. They're certainly not very sussed about the rights of people of self-determination here in the Western Cape. So they pick and choose. But I mean, look, the
and
ANC...
Kosovo, South Africa has not recognized Kosovo. The West has recognized. Most of the free world has done it, and it's wonderful. I worked in Kosovo. I love Kosovo. And yeah. I was negatively surprised South Africa has not recognized Kosovo. Is this also connected to the Russian pivot of the South African government?
Yeah, so I have to be honest that Kosovo obviously is hugely significant for us legally because of the ICJ judgment. So I'm very familiar with that. I don't know exactly what the ANC's objection to it is, because they're totally hypocritical on self-determination. The fight for the end of apartheid was the fight for self-determination for Black South Africans, and I completely endorse that. I mean, for me, it's very easy. I support self-determination, democratic and peaceful self-determination. And I don't just apply it to the people that I like. I recognize that as a principle, that must apply to everybody, whether it suits me or it doesn't suit me. And that's the position that the ANC should have. If you look at its voting records at the UN, I mean, it just is, it doesn't support, for example, the ANC supports China, but doesn't support Taiwan's right to self-determination. That would be another great example. It's just completely hypocritical, as opposed to recognizing that across the board. And then it'll find any manner of justifications to sort of try and justify its position. But I mean, the ANC is a completely morally bankrupt organization. And look, I have to say, for context, bear in mind that the ANC lost. They lost their outright majority in 2024. They're no longer the government alone, but they're still completely the dominant party. We've got a government of national unity, which is a complete farce, and basically the ANC do what they like, and they keep everybody else on control, because there's these two other breakaway parties of them, the EFF and MK, who are far more radical than even the ANC. So people kind of work with the ANC, who are likable villains. As opposed to the out and out terrorists that are waiting in the wings, but it's uncomfortable.
And the government of the Cape Independence Republic, the Western Cape Republic, Would you be leaving BRICS and working with Ukraine to supply it with weapons, so recognize Kosovo and leave the BRICS and join basically the OECD? Will you be a pro-Western country?
Sure. So look, so obviously I have to be careful. Who am I? I lead an advocacy group. I can't speak on behalf of the Western Cape people. There have to be democratic processes that must speak on behalf of themselves. But I think it's an absolute given that the Western Cape will be pro-Western. We've seen that from our polling. We see in terms of our allies, and the Western Cape has different trade partners anyway. Historically, a lot of the population have got historical links, if not current links, to Europe. The Western Cape absolutely would be a Western country. I suspect that we would leave BRICS, but I mean, I, you know, then you're up. If polling and sort of current views played out, that is what would happen. Obviously there'd have to be a democratic process. But
Let's talk about the big news about G20. This weekend will be the G20 summit. And as I've already explained, the G20 is not a very good organization in my view. And I see that some of the attendance is already crumbling. What's the current situation about the G20 summit? What do you think about it? And what is going to happen this weekend?
Well, look, so the G20 for us has been absolutely fantastic this week, but for not the reasons that you think, for the reasons that you'll like. So the G20 has cast a spotlight. So what do the ANC do when we have something like the G20? They come in, they sanitize all the roads around the thing. They try to make everything look nice to pretend that South Africa is not absolutely falling apart at the seams. But unfortunately, it's all gone horribly wrong for them. And two things: obviously, Trump has pulled out and said, "I'm not coming until you sort your issues with expropriation, without compensation, without farm tax, and without race-based policies." And we absolutely applaud Donald Trump for that, because those are big issues, and I'm absolutely delighted he's done it. And then we've got this really big civic rights organization, the Solidarity Group. And they have put up all around Joburg, where the G20 is, signs everywhere saying, "Welcome to the most racist country in the world," or "the most race-regulated country in the world." And the government's tearing down the signs as fast as they can, but they can't get them down fast enough. So now all of a sudden, all of these dignitaries are arriving in this preened little area in a city that's actually falling to pieces. It used to be called the City of Gold, and the BBC wrote an article which I loved about how all of these basements are filling up with human excrement because actually they can't be washed away. And that's the sort of, we've got this complete farce, and now these world leaders are turning up. Trump's pointed out that it's a farce, and he's not going. Malia's not going also. And those that turn up see these signs everywhere saying, "Welcome to the most race-regulated country in the world." The ANC are furious, and we are absolutely delighted, because anything that casts the spotlight on the problems that we have here is fantastic. I mean, South Africa is a disgrace. The apartheid government was alienated on the international scene, and rightly so, for its policies. This government is just as bad in different ways. Apartheid was probably more ideologically unjust. Far more people are suffering today than ever suffered under apartheid. This is just fantastic. Trump's right. South Africa should be boycotted. Certainly, those leaders who are responsible for our current problems.
But Trump is sending JD Vance, to my best knowledge. And what's your message for the vice president? Should he attend? Should he not attend? What do you want him to say when he comes? Because he is famously very outspoken and told us in Europe a lot of things we actually didn't want to hear. But nevertheless, what's your message for the vice president?
Well, I don't think the vice president is coming anymore. He was originally coming, but he's not coming either. The
Oh.
US is sending nobody, literally nobody.
Oh, that's big news here on the show. Really, he's not coming as well.
Look, I could have it wrong, but I don't think so. I think he originally was going to come, and after Trump made the announcement that no US officials have come, so the US is not represented at all. And actually, there was some disappointment because as you suggested, Vance had a few things lined up. that were going to be quite controversial. So for argument's sake, he was going to go and visit, as I understand it, make a speech at the Voortrekker Monument in Pretoria, which is the monument to the Afrikaners and for the Kill the Boer and so on. And so the US is deliberately drawing, the US has done what a lot of other European countries should also do. It's picked a side and it said there's good and there's bad, and we're not going to deal with the bad. We're going to deal with good, and we're going to stand with the good. And that has been fantastic. And whatever Trump's issues may be, and I recognize, at the end of the day, he's an unusual character. But in terms of this issue, absolutely delighted, and an awful lot more European leaders would do very well to do the same to do the same thing. We'd like to see a lot more people being outspoken on these issues in South Africa, because the West is in denial about what's happening in South Africa. As you say, they still think it's all fairies and roses and rainbows and Nelson Mandela and everybody loves each other. But meanwhile, we're killing each other. We've got no work. We've got chronic crime. The economy's collapsing. The infrastructure's collapsing. It's an absolute nightmare. And the world is still pretending that, hey, it's all great. Nelson Mandela, Nelson Mandela, Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela's long gone. And we're right back at I don't want to use the word reverse apartheid, because it's not exactly the same, but we're right back where the pendulum has swung from very racist white people to very racist black people. And unfortunately, you had very competent racist white people who were building a country, even if they were doing it unequally, to highly incompetent and extremely corrupt black leaders who are racist, corrupt, and incompetent. So they drive around in Ferraris and Lamborghinis and Mercedes, and the average person of all races, and the people who suffer the most are black, are living in abject poverty, struggling to put food on the table. We've got something ridiculous like 3 million taxpayers and 18 million grant recipients. I mean, it's not viable.
That's a big disaster. Now, tell me, Phil, about the European leaders, because I understand that only President Milei from Argentina has also cancelled, but all the European leaders, I guess it's Italy, Germany, France, UK, and also the EU leadership themselves, they will probably all turn up this weekend in South Africa, and they will say wonderful things about our free trade partner, bring presents, bring further funding, and say how wonderful South Africa acts on the global stage, when in reality, this is all not true, because South Africa is really in the enemy camp and the hostile camp. And so, what's your message for the European leaders? What's your hope that they will address in the issues? And what's your appeal to the European leaders now ahead of the G20 summit?
Oh, look, frankly, they're going to do exactly what you say, and they're not going to listen to me, but shame on them. Shame on them. Look, you have to, look, politicians don't like principles. Politicians like expedience, and that's unfortunately the reality. But I mean, for me, you have a, you know, none of us are perfect, but you have a set of principles, and you should apply those across the board. And actually, whether it's convenient or whether it's not convenient, and that's what, frankly, there are things that go on in South Africa. If the government was the other way around, if we still had a white government, those leaders, many of those European leaders, would be the most outspoken, condemning white South Africans for the actions, and rightly so. But actually, when the worms turned, they should be condemning the black government of South Africa just as much, and they're not. And actually, I always really admire people who stand both sides of the coin. And a good example is no longer with is Desmond Tutu. Now, Desmond Tutu was a highly outspoken critic of the apartheid government. But when actually we got the ANC government, he became just as highly outspoken against the ANC government. In fact, at one point, he famously turned around to Jacob Zuma and said, "You make me ashamed to be a black man." And I admire people who stand on the principle, whether it's convenient or not, and even if their sort of dreams are shattered, which would have been the case of Tutu. So that, I would like to see the Western leaders take Tutu's example and say, look, what went before was terrible, but you lot are absolutely no better, and in many ways you're worse. We're not get, we're going to stand with Trump and not allow you to continue to behave this way.
Because South Africa could be a wonderful ally in theory, but in reality is not. And we should definitely not behave as if they would be. So from the European perspective, this summit is a big failure. And it would be much better if the European leaders would choose as American president and not go to the G20 summit, because there can be nothing positive coming out of it.
Or if they're here, at least stand up and make an honest speech of the difference. Because people, and ironically, it sits in the West, people forget just how strategically significant South Africa is. As soon as the Suez Canal is closed or compromised, and at the moment something like 80% of US shipping, I don't know what the number is, European shipping, doesn't go through the US Canal, where does it go? It goes around the Cape of Good Hope. And who controls that? South Africa. And ironically, it sits in the Western Cape. Now, you know, at some point, looking forward, the West has to make the calculation. You know, China's got this expansionist naval policy. You know, the South African national government controls Simonstown. You know, it's only a matter of time before China controls that Cape Sea route. And you know, that is a very, very significant thing. And ironically, Cape independence, one of our biggest selling points to our international partners is do you want a Western ally controlling one of the most strategic parts in the South Atlantic Ocean, or do you want China controlling it, or a Chinese ally? Because that effectively is the choice. And it's a highly significant decision, which I don't think gets enough airtime. Because frankly, Cape independence is a very short window of opportunity. That there is, people have this argument about genocide. Is genocide going on in South Africa? And I think my view is it's not in the legal sense of the word. But ethnic cleansing is, and not ethnic cleansing in the sense of Rwanda or where it's hugely violent. Actually, it's far more subtle than that. But what have we got? We've got a national government that for 30 years actively discriminates against a minority of the population. And that minority of that population is rapidly declining in size as all the people leave because they can't. So ethnic minorities in South Africa, and particularly white South Africans, are being chased out of the country. So we don't have ethnic cleansing at the end of a barrel of the gun. We have ethnic cleansing at the end of national government policy. But it's undeniable. It's there in the statistics. Anyone can go and see it. So when Trump says there's bad things going on in South Africa, he's not wrong.
Absolutely. Now tell me also about your plans for 2026, because that can be a crucial year for the independence of many of the new nations to emerge. Especially on this show, we are promoting the breakup of Russia, our enemy state, but also in Nigeria, Biafra, there's Khalistan in India, and now there's also the Cape Republic in ex-South Africa. So question is, what's your plan? What's your plan of action to promote yourself on the global stage and tell the free world to back the Cape independence and the Republic of Cape?
Yeah. Look. So, it's strange to say, I'm grateful for opportunities like this. So we engage on a fairly regular basis, but we're very confident of support on the international stage. I had 5 weeks in Washington earlier this year. I've been to the UK and met with Farage. I've met with two delegations from the European Parliament. There's no doubt that the Western Cape, provided we follow peaceful and democratic solutions, will receive international recognition. We'll be like Kosovo. We probably won't get formal membership of the UN because we'll be vetoed by Russia and China or whatever. But actually, we'll be a functioning emerging state.
We have about 110 countries who are part of the free world from the 200. And most of these have recognized then Kosovo already. So you can expect a similar number, because the ones who have recognized Kosovo will also recognize the Cape Republic.
Yeah, that's exactly our take. So for us, we have a we have a political challenge. And actually, I've talked a lot about black and white South Africans. And I should say that in the Western Cape, the largest ethnic group is what we call coloured. That they are, so we have black South Africans, brown South Africans, and white South Africans. And the biggest group in the Western Cape are the brown people. They have had a particularly bad deal. They have a saying that under apartheid we were too black for the apartheid government, and under the ANC we're too white for the, and they really have a lot of challenges, and they're a critical group in this situation. And in the Western Cape, we have to get a political foothold around the independence movement. One of the challenges that we have is that the party that governs the Western Cape is called the Democratic Alliance. And they would be a social democrat party in Europe. So actually, they're perceived by South Africans as being right wing, but they're actually centre left. And they are not supportive of Cape independence, but they actually govern very well. They functionally, they run the Western Cape from in terms of service providers and so on, to the point that South Africa is, the Western Cape is much better run. So you have this big challenge between how do you get people to vote for their future when they're voting for their present. They're very, very good every election. They've got a very slick election machinery that says, look, vote for us, otherwise the ANC are coming back, and they sort of managed to bring everything down to the here and now as opposed to the future. Now, we ran focus groups before the last election, in that we found we ran them of their voters. Yeah, and their voters, when we looked about short term, none of them were willing to vote against that party. They believed that they'll come and fix my pipes if they burst. They'll come, but when we asked them about the long term, asked them to describe the country wanted to live in them, not one of them believed that that party could deliver the future that they want. So our focus is going to be very, very political next year, and really trying to unite much more closely the different groups of the Western Cape around one political force, because we have to get a domestic political foothold to be able to drive this, because we know we'll have the international support. It's almost an unusual situation where internationally we'll know we're fine, but domestically we need to do more polling shows that the majority of people support this, and yeah, the majority have supported a referendum for a long time, but we can't get the government to call one. South Africa is unusual in that the Western Cape government in its constitution has the right to call a referendum on Cape independence. We don't need the national government's permission. We just need to get enough leverage over the provincial government, and I personally negotiated an agreement with them about 3-4 years ago to call a referendum, but unfortunately they broke it. So our focus is very, very much domestic in this next year.
So the focus should be very much also internationally, because everything depends on the outcome of the Russian war against Ukraine. Because once Russia will lose, Putin will lose the power, and we are working intensively on the breakup of the Russian Federation. And once this movement is coming, we will also definitely work consistently with all the independence movements in India, ex-India, ex-South Africa, ex-Nigeria, because then it's the moment when we've changed the global order a bit, and we will also try to support, withdraw our support from the axis allies of Russia. And so then the moment comes when also the independence of the Cape Republic is on the agenda. So thanks for your support for Ukraine. But Ukraine's struggle is very much also your struggle, because without the breakup of Russia, there will be no international movement for independence of new nations. But when this is coming, the moment will come as well for the Cape Republic.
No, look, thank you, and I appreciate that. Look, I understand the geopolitics are a big factor in where we're playing, and particularly this right of self-determination, which is sort of a vastly developing right. And ironically, Kosovo was one of the key key turning points where Kosovo was able to achieve self-determination with the endorsement of the ICJ, or the tacit endorsement against the will of Serbia, and that was obviously very, very significant and hugely legally important and a precedent that's helped us an awful lot. Yeah.
Phil, we count on a government of West Cape to recognize Kosovo in the future. And we are thankful for your support for Ukraine. This is the most important at the moment. And I want to thank you very much for this discussion, this show. I wish you all the best for the preparation for independence of the Cape Republic. And thanks a lot for sharing this insight. And good luck on the G20 summit. Also, I hope that the world will really understand your case. And I will share this video widely. And thanks a lot for coming to the show. And all the best for the freedom of the Cape Republic.
Thanks, Gunther. I really appreciate it. It was great to be with you to chat.
Looking forward. And please come back to the show in the future. And thanks a lot for joining.
Okay. Bye.
Nice to meet you.